KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Here we go again, it's the game we love.
Tune in on the first and third Tuesday of the month at 11 a.m. for Winner's Bias, a new show exploring the culture around tabletop gaming. From game nights to conventions, Nate and James share what makes the hobby so vibrant through banter and interviews with local members of the hobby game scene. And if we can inspire a few listeners to join us around the table, all the better. More people to play with. Winner's Bias. You don't have to win to have fun, but it doesn't hurt. The first and third Tuesday of the month at 11 a.m.
KVOO has a mobile app. You can listen to all your favorite shows, subscribe to KVOO podcasts, even set KVOO as your alarm clock. Just look for KVOO on the iTunes and Google Play Store. And don't forget to leave us a 5-star review.
Well, yes, hi, this is Rocker T passing through, you know, when I'm in Portland. Checking for 90.7 KVOO, for real. This is the One Love Jam Down with a DJ like Ja Will, for real. Now my selector!
And you are listening to KBOO 90.7 FM Portland, your favorite radio station. And tonight we are with, well, TK Taparura, host of the Global Sale, and we're here, of course, live in the air room. And well, TK, how are you?
I'm doing tonight? Great. How are you?
Yeah, Ender? I'm doing well. My name is Ender Black. I'm director of public affairs, and I'm just so proud to be here talking to you about your show.
Likewise.
And you know, the first thing I want to do is just want to ask you your impressions about your experience hosting the Global Sale, bringing people in. What have you learned from this experience?
It has been an exciting experience, honestly, to be here talking to people, getting to know their backgrounds, their cultures, their foods, and how they feel about Portland. Actually, since I'm also an immigrant, there is a lot going on regarding how they compare the current and the past. So it's a rewarding experience because I'm also learning a lot as we go. It's entertaining, it's educating. At the same time, it's gripping and riveting because there's a lot to learn every day. And I realize education doesn't stop. Mm-hmm. We just keep learning every day.
Well, I have to tell you, we're very happy to have you join KBOO, because as you know, Oregon is not the most diverse place in America.
Right.
So it is very important to have representation. And how do you feel about the response from your guests, from bringing them here, having them talk about important things from their nations, from their countries of origin? What kind of feedback have you gotten from your guests? It's been a year already.
Yeah, it has been a year.
Yeah
for sure. The feedback has been really encouraging because I see a lot of, it's humbling actually to hear them talk about how they felt to be on air for the first time. Most of them are here first timers on air, getting to know and to connect with their audiences back into their culture groups, community groups. They feel so empowered and they feel satisfied that they at least have a platform to share what they have been holding onto their chest for too long. So it's just rewarding for them to be having this opportunity to have a platform where they can be listened to and where somebody can actually ask them about their culture, about their experience and about their feelings about the whole situation, being here as immigrants or refugees. It's really rewarding and exciting to them. So mm-hmm. they're excited. And to me, I feel like I've been that conduit for them to be here. And it's a win-win for both of us. Mm-hmm. Them being happy, me being happy too, because I have somebody to talk to. And I also am learning from them as we talk and as we go along.
So you have been a conduit
right.
of communication.
That's right.
And what about, if it's okay with you, what about if you tell us uh-huh. a little bit? Because I don't think we haven't talked to you. You haven't been on this side of the microphone, right?
That's right.
Uh-huh. And I think it's really important because we've had you for a year already, uh-huh. and your show is very unique. You focus on the immigrant experience, specifically the African immigrant experience in America, and your experience in Oregon.
Right.
Again, not the most diverse place in America, so it's a very important outlook.
Yeah.
Tell us how what brought you to Cebu? How did you end up here? What happened?
I came to Cebu firstly because there is a guy named Rashad, my brother Rashad, yeah. Mm-hmm. So Rashad wanted to interview me about my book. Mm-hmm. So we had an interview here on a Saturday. After we did the interview, we kept on talking because we used to work together with Rashad. We used to work on the same department. So after the interview, we kept talking, and he listened to my stories. I would be telling him stories about my past. So he said one day when we're like on MLK, just having an event, he said, hey, you have a lot of stories. Why don't you try to bring those stories live and talk to the audiences, wider audiences, and talk to them about your experiences? I'm sure some would love to hear more about what you've been through and what you hope to achieve in America. So I said, oh, wow, is that possible? Then he said, yeah, I think we can give it a try. So he gave me some numbers, said, okay, can you call these numbers and get them to know who you are and what you're trying to do and so forth, give them samples of what you can do. So I went on, I called the numbers, then I got the links and everything. Long story short, I was called in to give a sample of what I could deliver. So from there, that's how we got to know you, Andrea, and Azia, and Althea, and many other guys who are in the building. Nate was there too, I think. Then from there, now we became a thing after that. So I'm happy to be here 1 year later. I'm still here.
Mm-hmm. And I want to remind our audience that you're listening to KBO Portland, and you are welcome to call 503-231-8187. That's 503-231-8187. And just participate. Ask questions like what we're all about, what the global sale is all about, what Tike Taparura is all about, what it is that we're doing here in the Public Affairs Department at KBU. And Tike, what about if you tell us or remind the audience a little bit of where you're from, your journey? Tell us.
Sure. I'm from Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe is in Central Africa, right above South Africa. Our borders are Mozambique, South Africa, Zambia, and Botswana. We're in Central Africa. If you look at the African map towards the end, towards the southern part of the African map, you see a country that's shaped like a teapot. That's my country, that's Zimbabwe. It used to be called Rhodesia. Some know it as Rhodesia. That's the colonial name, but now it's Zimbabwe. That's what it is now. And it's a small country, maybe the size of Oregon, about 20 million people. Three tribes and three languages. That's all it is. Very interesting, but that's where I am from.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And would you like to share a little bit of your journey from Zimbabwe? Because I think I remember a little bit from one of your episodes, and you shared that it wasn't just Zimbabwe to Portland, Oregon.
Right.
It wasn't a straight flight from Zimbabwe to Portland.
That's right.
It was quite a few steps and quite a long journey and a very interesting journey. Would you like to share with us how that journey went?
Sure. So back in the day, in the 80s, on TV, there used to be some TV series like Dynasty and Dallas, Falcon Crest. So among those shows that we were watching, because we had limited TV and we had only one TV channel in the whole country, so we had specific licenses for watching American shows on TV. Like we had comedy, The Jeffersons, and some other shows that I've forgotten right now. But okay, when it came to prime time, we could watch shows like Dallas, so even Texas Rangers. So when you watch Dallas, when you're down there in Africa, like in my country, Zimbabwe, we hardly have any impressions of these cities. That was way before internet. You could, now today you can Google and find out for yourself. But back in the day, there was nothing like that. You could just watch what you see on TV and believe what you see. You can see New York City, oh, wow, that's great. LA, all these cities. So we saw Dallas when we used to watch Dallas a lot. Like, why don't we go to Dallas? I was telling my wife, Victoria, why don't we go to Dallas? It sounds like a very cool place. That's how we ended in Dallas. So in 2000, we bought tickets to DFW. Interestingly, when the ticket printed out, the itinerary ticket printed out, DFW, like, no, we're not going to DFW. We actually want to go to Dallas. So they said, no, the DFW is Dallas-Fort Worth. That's the main airport. It doesn't really have to be Dallas as it is, but DFW, that's the airport for the Metroplex. So that's where you're going. And we're like, oh, okay, thank you. So we landed in Dallas on November 23, 2000. It was cold. I think it was just the day before or the day after Thanksgiving, if I'm not mistaken. That's when we landed in Dallas. It was cold that day. And it was quite an experience to be finally in Dallas. Everything was just amazing. The culture, the people, what we saw and everything. Then we tried to reconcile with what we'd seen on TV. It's so different. But I mean, we had just the idea that, okay, we're in Dallas now. It was so exciting to be in Dallas, finally to be in the place that you have always watched on TV.
And so you ended up in Dallas, Texas, because of a TV show.
That's right.
And how was your impression? Because the TV show is fiction from the reality.
Yeah, normally what you watch on TV is what you get when you get to the real life. So we got to Dallas. You'll be thinking of like, okay, maybe one of these days I'm going to bump into like the Texas Ranger, or I'm going to bump into like Emmitt Smith. By then he was playing for the Cowboys. Maybe I'm going to bump into all these celebrities that you see. Oh, they're associated with Dallas. Nothing of the sort. So I remember one of the days, because we used to do postcards by then. There was no internet, no email in our little sphere. Internet was just coming in. I remember my cousin asking me like, hey, have you met, they were just asking, have you met Michael Jackson as yet? I'm like, no, that's far from it. He lives in California. Have you met all these Bon Jovi, all these other big stars? Have you met them? I'm like, none, zero, zero. Then they asked the last question. So which America are you in? Did you go to the right America? Because you don't have, you haven't seen any celebrity as yet. I'm like, they are not easy to see. They're just like very rare animals. I would say animals in cults. They are not easy to see. It's not easy to meet a celebrity for any reason. They're like, oh, really? We thought maybe when you walk into America, you're just going to walk into Eddie Murphy or any of these big stars anytime, anywhere in the mall or something. I'm like, no, it doesn't work like that. We started accepting reality like, okay, it's not easy to meet them. They are there. They exist. Of course, this is America, but you don't see them like you would see them like you want to see them in the real life.
It's a big country, huh?
Yeah, it's a big country, yes.
Yeah, and look, I want to pivot to what I believe is a book that you authored and you published.
Right.
Is My USA Postcards to Africa. Is this correct?
That's correct.
Is this I think that's not the only book you've published. Or maybe it is?
I would say it's not the only one, but it's just a continuation. The way in circles, I started with the Touching the American Rainbow, then it later morphed into My USA Postcards to Africa.
And My USA Postcards to Africa, that's your book. That's kind of like your main book that you have published out there.
Correct.
And what would you say the audience about it?
In that book, I'm actually just venting out, but in a very humorous and sarcastic way. I'm telling a story, my American story. Compared to my African story, I outline my reasons why I left Africa. Then I also mention my culture shock experiences, things I went through, which are very funny. Like, for example, I'd never known that food could be advertised on billboards. In my country, they don't advertise food on billboards. They only advertise maybe cars, maybe clothes. But yeah, I think it's more about food. Come taste this yummy burger with a lot of steaks, quarter pound or whatever. You see all this cheese melting and all this, then you feel like, wow, I want to go taste that. Your taste buds are heightened up that you want to actually go eat that. In my country, they don't advertise food for health reasons. they want to discourage people from just continually consuming. So they don't advertise food unless it's maybe some special restaurant that just opened in the neighborhood, maybe. But they advertise other stuff like, okay, clothes. They advertise shoes. They may advertise cars. Yeah, something like that. It was a different culture, but I also discovered a lot of interest in animals in America. Animals get a lot of respect. In my country, we love animals because we are friends. We depend on animals, but we don't really like worship them. We love them, but we have limits. We can't share like plates with our dogs. Dogs can eat in their own separate plates. Once a dog has eaten in a plate, that plate has to be reserved for dogs. We can't really use the same plate. Even cats.
Even cats,
yeah. We love them, but we can't mix dishes. So I was invited to a friend's house. I would call a friend, a neighbor, invited me to their place. And they had a dog coming to sniff on the food we were just about to eat. And I think the dog actually licked one of the plates just before the meal. It was such a difficult moment.
For you.
For me, yeah. Like, we can't be in the same plate.
Culture shock. Yeah, that's funny. I have to say that's funny because I used to let my cat eat off of my plate multiple times. He would actually eat before I did. And my dog can do the same thing even now, and I would be like perfectly okay. But I totally understand the cultural differences.
Yes.
Yeah. And how did that work out for you?
I was so uncomfortable. Like, I don't know which plate the dog ate onto. So it was so difficult. But eventually I figured maybe there was nothing wrong. I mean, we can still get along and do a lot of other things. Yeah, it was just a shock to me. Like, okay, this is how much respect animals get in America, which is a good thing. I mean, I opened my eyes and tolerated and accepted that, okay, well, we are equals and we can still share the same dishes and still even share the same bed, which I would never personally do, but I understand, well, they are company, we need them, they are part of us. So I opened my eyes over the years and I accepted the culture as part of the new culture, as part of growing up.
Yeah, well, I have to say that only pets get that type of respect. The rest, I mean, here in the U.S., unless, you know, dogs and cats definitely get a lot of respect. But beyond that, I wouldn't say that the animals get a lot of respect. That's a whole different subject.
Yeah, so adding to that, I would also wonder, like, I wish the same love given to pets could be given to other races. I mean, when somebody looks different or sounds different from you, I would expect the same kind of love and respect to that person. Why? Because, like in my case, in my country, there was a lion that got killed by a dentist from Minnesota. He killed a lion called Cecil the lion. Mm-hmm. He was a dentist in Minnesota. So when he killed that lion, the issue got viral. It went global. Like, why did this doctor kill this lion for, what do they call that, trophy hunting? Right. It was given so much significance and so much reportage that everybody knew about this, and there was bars, demonstrations, protests, and everything. Right. Every day in Africa, in my country, people die because of civil rights, human rights issues, and so forth. Nobody gives that kind of attention. Mm-hmm. But when this lion got killed, America woke up. Like, why? Why did you kill this lion? So I wish the same love given to wildlife, given to pets and dogs, could apply to other races or to many people. Like, we just have to love humanity the same way we love our animals. And if anything happens to our animals or to our people, let's just show the same love and concern. Let's go viral. Let's wake up America whenever something happens to a human being as well. We don't just have to love animals, but let's also love the human being, the human race as it is. It doesn't matter where you're coming from, what you look like, or what you sound like. Let's just love and love.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you know, this is kind of showing me something.
Mm-hmm.
And or maybe it's pushing me to ask you something.
Yeah.
And it is, you know, your experience
mm-hmm.
here in the US.
Right.
Given that as you know, I'm sure you have either experienced yourself or seeing it expressed towards others.
Yeah.
Different levels or layers of racism.
Mm-hmm.
Is this correct?
That's correct.
If it's not uncomfortable, mm-hmm. too uncomfortable for you, I know that it's very educational for our audience to see,
yeah.
to hear these different experiences. If you can express what that feels like, what it was like, and how damaging it can be to experience any form of racism, no matter how subtle it is.
Right, here's my story. When I got a job, one of my first jobs here, the problem was because I sounded different, the supervisor would always not believe in whatever I said. Even when the moment you open up your mouth and you're sounding different, the supervisor never believed in what I said. No matter how valid or credible it was, they would have to check with local tones, accents, just to be sure before they get back to me. Like, there was something that happened in my presence. I was the only one, was the witness there. The supervisor had a struggle just to believe what I would tell. Then they would ask passersby, like, hey, did you see this happening? What happened? They're like, no, we're not here. He was here. That's me. He was here. So the supervisor finally turns to me like, hey, did you see what happened? I'm like, never mind. You had to consult first to those who look familiar or look who sound local, right? But I was here. I saw everything. But why turning to me as last priority? Well, anyways, forget about it.
Mm-hmm.
That's one. Then two, you can go into the same job situation, same day. I'm not trying to be a whiner, but I'm just being realistic. You can get in the same job, same time, same qualification. I had this kid, same everything with me, same day. We get hired. But the pace at which things change, you suddenly become a report to the person you got in the same position with. Same day you start reporting to them, like 3-4 months later, they're your supervisor. But you can tell something is not right. Well, you are almost doing the same output of the same production, but there is nothing for you. You have to report to this person because they are different from you, or because maybe they sound local or something. But of course, you have to be very humble about it. You don't have to take it personally sometimes.
Mm.
Just do what you need to do. I always tell myself, you're an immigrant, you're not from here, but do what you can. Feed your family, do work. Work hard, do your best. Things get harder. Sometimes it's frustrating, but what do you do?
Yeah, I have to say that I don't think that sharing these stories is whining. I think this is part of a kind of an educational process that people have to go through.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, I am not a white person.
Right.
I am Potawatomi. I'm an indigenous person.
Mm-hmm.
And as such, although as Westerner as anybody else I mm-hmm. can be, my culture and my race is just not white, period. You know, and I have to live with that every day. And it's okay. We adapt, right? It's
fine.
Mm-hmm. But I want you, if that's okay with you, because this is important to me and it's important to, I believe, for our audience to get a little bit of this type of output. Or input, and
right.
It is, how does it feel? If it's okay, we can go to another question if that's what you like, but like, how does it feel to be othered like that, and why that is something that should be avoided?
To be othered feels really humiliating because sometimes you're taken for granted. It's like you are not thinking. You're taking like, you have maybe 4.5 senses, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can meet people who talk about, oh, we are anti-racist, we are doing this and this, but the very moment they turn their backs on you, they are number one racist as well. It happens a lot of times. You can think we are on board together, we're fighting this, we're doing this, but sometimes it doesn't work like that. There are always some situations where you feel like still that trust is not 100%. It feels humiliating, you're taken for granted, but what most people forget is that every human being is the antennae that works. You can tell something's going on here. You can tell we are pretending to be together, but it's not what it is. Yeah. So there's that feeling. It's humiliating. It's painful. And it's frustrating as well, because you're trying to be human. You're trying to be there with others, but it's not really there, because once you turn your back, stories are built behind your back. And you just, next time you see those people, you just smile at them, and just to make peace and to make relations continue, you pretend to be, you are there, but you know what's going on behind your back. You know exactly. Because sometimes you're like a sniffer dog. You exactly know where you're wanted and when you're not wanted. You know it already. But when you meet people, you just have to act like, okay, everything is okay. Let's move on. Mm-hmm. Let's go. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And just to pivot from this, I know that you are a busy person. Mm-hmm. And you work for an institution, a governmental institution out of Salem.
Okay.
And what about if you would like to share? Because the way I see it is like this is how you're collaborating with the work of our state. Okay. And what it is that you're doing? Tell us what it is. How it is that you're collaborating and enriching our state, Oregon.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to make relevant the immigrants and refugees. I'm trying to make them their lifestyle, their capacities, their cultures, foods, and everything relevant to the platform. Because sometimes there's this stereotype where people just look at immigrants and refugees as liabilities, public charges, bringing disease, bringing trouble to the town, and all that. So what we're trying to do is just to make the communities believe in what they are looking at. Like, it's not always the picture that somebody can paint about these people, because you don't know them. So you don't have to paint them. You don't have to stereotype them or to judge them just because they look different or they sound different. And also, lack of information can be a dangerous thing. It's a dangerous trigger to prejudice. So to cater for that, to avoid that, the best way is to bring the people to the table so that they can be known. We educate the public and make the communities aware and understand, oh, these people are here from other countries. What do those countries do? They do ABC. What do those people bring to the city? Culture, food. If you look at those food trucks out there, they tell a story. We have Asian food there, we have Persian food, we have African foods, we have different foods from other countries. People taste all those foods. They love it. Look at the radio stations. They play different kinds of music. Sometimes we hear Nigerian music on the radio, African music in general, Asian music, European music. It's that diversity that brings that richness, that wealthiness, that promotes love, understanding. Global peace is a concept, but it can be built and made stronger through that love, that connection, when we build a common platform where people can get together and get to know each other. Oh, where are you from? What do you eat? What do you like to do? What makes you angry? What offends you? How can we do better? Can I learn something from you that maybe I could use in my culture? Can I practice something that you do? Then we exchange those values, those practices. We get each other into some strength and empowerment that makes this a better place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I just want to remind the audience that you're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM Portland, your favorite radio station. We're live in, well, Studio 2 here at KBOO, and you're welcome to call 503-231-8187, and we are going to go on a music break.
Great.
In a moment. Whenever. Soon, we just... There you go. Thank you. We're back. We're live here in Studio 2, KBOO 90.7 FM Portland. And we are back with TK Tapurura, TK, who is the host and, well, producer of one of our brand new public affairs programs, The Global Sale. And it's a show that is very, very, very special for all of us because it tackles the immigrant, the African immigrant experience, the race issues, and also the cultural richness that has to do with Africa, things that we don't know about. A lot of it we just don't know about. And I want to invite you to call if you'd like. Just ask a question, or maybe you can just participate, and we'll just have you come in, you know, online with us. That's 503-231-8187. That is, again, 503-231-8187. And we're with TK Tapurura. And hey, TK, what about Zimbabwe, your country? What it is, all the wonderful things you want to tell us about Zimbabwe.
Thank you, Andrew. Zimbabwe is, like I said before, it's a country in southern Africa. So it has two main tribes, the Ndebele and the Shona. Zimbabwe was born in 1980. That's when we won back our independence after 1890 struggles through the colonial system. We spent like 100 years trying to be ourselves, trying to get our independence back to our hands. So 1980 was the year when we got our independence back. But I want to talk mainly about our culture in Zimbabwe. The culture in Zimbabwe is like people have to be happy. That's the first thing. Happiness is part of a healthy system. People believe in happiness so much. And what you see from the facial features is what you get. Even if it's unsaid, believe the facial features. So people in Zimbabwe basically are happy. They serve food happy. If you find somebody serving food with a frowning face, our policy is don't eat that food. You don't know what's in there. So we have to be happy from the heart. Heart happiness brings a lot of joy, a lot of pride of who we are, and it brings together people. So when we have like public events, be it a wedding, a funeral, or any birthday party or something, the first thing that you hear is the sound of the drum. The drum attracts a lot of people far and near. They come, they attend the event. When you go to our event in Zimbabwe, nobody asks for an invite card or whatever. No, you just come as you are. You don't have to know the person directly, but when you see a big crowd, join in. That's our policy, just join in. So be part of the group, be happy. Eat all you can. Nobody's gonna like write you down like, oh, you ate a burger at my house. No, there's nothing like that. You ate a sandwich at my house, so you owe me a sandwich. No, it's not like that. Just come there, eat while you can still eat. That's fine. If you're good, go home. If you still wanna have more time, have a good time, just stay there, enjoy yourself, dance, drink, eat, and go home. You don't even have to explain yourself why you're here, who do you know at this party, and something like that. No, we don't do that. Just feel at home. That's where we are. That's the culture. So in Zimbabwe, everybody must have two homes. That's the policy as well. Everybody has two homes. The reason is that the first home is your village home. That's where you are raised, in the village. In the village, land is free. You can build whatever plan you have. You can have as many cows as you want. You can build as big a house as you can. You have tribal lands. So in the tribal land, that's where you build your own home. Then you can build for your kids and all that. But it's free land. And there is no charge, no taxes, nothing. You just live there for free. So that's the village home. This is the place where everybody who is in trouble, wherever they are, they come to the village. Come to the village whenever you have problems, because when you come to the village, you don't pay for anything to live in the village. Food is free, you live, the land is free, and everything. The villagers, your fellow village people, the community will take care of you. When they say it takes a village to raise a child, they really mean it, because when you are in the village, you will never sleep hungry. You will never be stranded, because everybody has something for you. Do you need a piece of clothing item? Do you need food? Do you need water? Anybody can just feed you. No questions asked, no liabilities, no ledgers entered, nothing. You just be among your people. You float in joy, you float in happiness and kindness. That's who we are. So that's the first home. Your second home is the urban home. We call it a makeshift home, but it's a real home like the homes you would find in Portland. Those everybody can also have. If you have a good job, you're a doctor, you're an accountant, whatever job you have, you build that home for the legacy of your children. That's where you live because you're going to work. When after work you come back to that city home, it's an urban home, you live there. So when you die, it passes on, like by the estate, by the law, and everything passes on to your family. But you are buried back in the family cemetery in the village if you want. Those who have moved up on can be buried in the city cemetery. You live there, that's it. So you have two homes, the village home and the urban home. But when it comes to special occasions like Christmas, New Year celebrations, Easter holidays, whatever holidays we have, Independence, everybody wants to go to the village because, as an example, you could be living in Eugene, you could be in Vancouver, Washington, you could be in New York City. When it comes that time, the special time of the year, everybody flies straight into the village. That's where you connect to your cousins, nieces, and nephews. Everybody's in the village. You butcher a cow. You play loud music. You drink whatever you want to drink. You eat whatever you want to eat. 3-4 days, nonstop fun. Dancing, drinking, eating, getting to know each other. It's like a family reunion every year, especially if it's Christmas, because there is no business happening in my country between December 24 and January 2. There is nothing happening. The only places open are the police station for law and order and the gas station and maybe some convenience stores. So everybody's in the village just having fun, playing music, dancing, enjoying each other's company because it happens only once a year. That's the normal, regular standard of living in Zimbabwe. That's how people live. So towards Christmas time, there's a lot of traffic going to the village. Buses, like I would say the equivalent of Greyhound here, they fill up so fast. People load stuff, groceries, special goods, special items. They want to take them to the village. And there's a lot going on there. Convenience stores are busy. Some actually sell stuff by the streets and all that. So when you live in the village, we don't have like streets in the village, no. The setup is random. You build houses in a cluster style. It's random. You just build according to tribal lines and tribe. There are some demarcations there that are traditionally known. So you follow those demarcations just to build your own structure here. You leave space for grazing for animals. Then you move on to the next one. You put a fence. You build your house. You put a fence for the goats. You put a fence for the sheep. You build some kennels for the dogs and all that. So it's just clustered. It's orderly though because we respect each other's space and each other's borderlines, and we drink from some shared facilities like the wells are shared, and there are some other things that we just share. Towards the end of the borderline for these homes, there is a common facility like a water well, or you can have a deep tank for dipping the animals to shake off the ticks and so forth, the pests. We can also have some special places like the grinding mill where you grind corn so you can make our special dishes. There are some services that are provided randomly by the government. The government gets into the village just to bring order. So they help with the demarcation, they help with contour ridges and irrigation and many other things that they can work with the villagers to accomplish. There are so many things just to bring order, better living conditions and so forth, and so that people don't really have to fight as they live. They have to just to respect each other's space. So that's the village life. And at night, people have to gather at an agreed point where they can play drums under the moonlight, just dance, enjoy themselves, tell stories, enjoy your drinks and enjoy your food, many other things. You just share traditions and practices, but by the end of the day, everybody, at the end of the night, everybody goes home. Tomorrow, you continue the same thing and same thing again. And when people gather together, they share food, different kinds of food. You can have barbecue, you can butcher goats, we can butcher cows, and you just share the meat and you just enjoy yourselves. It's laughter, stories, comedy, whatever you want. People are just having a good time. And there is no animosity there. People are just respecting each other, just having a good time. That's the village life. So the culture in Zimbabwe, it's all about just being kind to the next person. And we believe by sharing food, that brings blessings to you so that you can do better wherever you go. And you feel better in giving than in receiving, because in giving, you feel much more like accomplished. Oh, I just did something good to the next person. Then this person is going to do a better thing to the next person and so forth. That's how we spread this kindness. So that's the same thing that we bring to America. When I see somebody from my country, if he looks like my age, he's my brother. If he looks like slightly older, maybe silver hairs on the head, he's an uncle. I don't have to really ask him like his name or whatever. I would just say, hi, brother, even from across the street. Hi, bro. That's how we do it. Even when I see like local brothers, like Afro-Americans, same thing. I see him across the street. He looks like slightly older than me. Hi, uncle. It happens a lot. Hi, brother. We connect that way. That's how we roll.
So you connect based on... like some sort of familiarity.
Familiarity.
Like cultural familiarity.
That's right.
So my question is, do you miss Zimbabwe? Because the U.S. sounds like it's a very different place.
Right. Here's the thing. Coming here was a very great thing, I would say. I've learned so much in America. And if I'd lived in Zimbabwe for all my life, I would have missed an opportunity to grow, to learn, you know. They say a frog that lives in the drum will never discover the wonders of the ocean. So I came here through certain circumstances that pressured me to leave my home country. But coming here has opened my eyes in a very broad ways to prospect and to see how things can be different. This is a global stage. You learn a lot. I know so many cuisines that I've eaten. I've known so many things.
Did you say a global state or
Stage?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a global stage. Yeah. You meet so many different people from different countries, and they tell you, "Oh, in our country, we do it this way. Here, they do it this way." So you learn so much. I could be a prince in my country, right, in my own little small kingdom. But when you come to America, you get to the stage, you're humble, then you have to learn, then you have to rise through the ladders just to learn a lot about Americans, about other cultures who are part of that immigrant community here in America. So it's a growth opportunity. I miss home in some ways. Like, people don't work that hard back home in my country as they work hard here. There is more free time to meet relatives, to meet family and friends, and we don't live on the stress of time. Watches are just there for decoration of the hand. When you want to come to my house on a Saturday, you don't tell me I'm coming at 2 p.m. No, you don't say that. You just tell me I'll come in the afternoon. It's fine.
Wow, that sounds like a fun, that yeah, completely different.
Because time. I notice, yeah, when you say 2 o'clock and you show up at 2:10, oh,
people are starting to give you faces.
Yeah.
Huh? Like, it's like, how dare you?
Yeah,
15 minutes late. Are you crazy?
So there is no stress of time. We live freely. I mean, everything is forgivable. You come late, it's fine. I'll come in the afternoon, it's okay. Don't worry about it. Mm-hmm. Yes, and we just live like that. That's how we do things. But of course, it's kind of backward, but I find it less stressful to deal with situations. Some would say, oh, how can you live like that? But that's how we live. It's okay. We share food. Even if the meal was ready, we'd set 4 plates here and somebody just walks into the house. From those 4 plates, we can still make them 8. We split. Mm-hmm. That's how we do. We don't have to like, oh, you found us on dinner time, so we got to eat first, then we figure out how to feed you. We don't do that. It's disrespectful. When a guest shows up, even when you had washed your hands, you wish, let's just share. If we run short or we're not full enough, we can always order more so we can all be okay.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So generosity is the first thing. And before you throw food away in my culture, you have to ask, like, does anybody feel comfortable taking over my leftovers? You don't just say, okay, I ate 2 sandwiches or 4, therefore the rest needs to go to the trash can. No, we don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
You have to check with your neighbors, your friends, hey, these are still clean. Do you still want to have them? That's fine. That's how we do things. And you don't leave your friends or neighbors stranded when you know you can accommodate them.
Mm-hmm.
We have to reach out, have a big heart, and be considerate. That's the culture.
Well, I have to say, TK, that sounds like a wonderful experience. And I think that I have to say that you mentioned something about, like, some people might consider that backwards. And I don't think, I just think that, you know, there's a price of living in a highly developed, civilized society. And the price is that we're all a bunch of stuck-up, uptight people that, you know, have a real hard time connecting, you know, except with your best buddies. And it's a really sad situation. And, you know, I believe, based on everything I've learned, you know, from history and things I've read and school and everything, is that this, what you described, that type of familiarity with, you know, friends and family and people around you, mm-hmm. this is the human experience throughout the globe, not just for Africans, for indigenous people, but for mm-hmm. even, you know, for white people as well. Mm-hmm. You know, way before, you know, the Industrial Revolution in England that changed everything, mm-hmm. and definitely before, you know, the colonization process in the 1500s. That's how, from what I learned, what I've learned from school and everything and things I've read, is that that's just a human experience. That's how it used
to
be.
True.
And do you think that having that kind of history in your heart with you, do you think that makes you a better American?
Yeah, I believe it makes me a better American when I look at things and see how we can help each other to avoid being like thinking about just ourselves. Let's think about the next person. Let's put ourselves in their shoes. Let's have empathy in some of the things that we do. I think it also helps to build better race relations or better community relations, because before you think about yourself, you're also thinking about the next person and also thinking about the community where you live. If I dumped trash or oil by the street corner, how would the next person feel? If I leave the toilet not flushed, how would the next person, next user feel? Let's consider all those little points so that we can all make a better place where we live and make a better world. How can I help my neighbor? How can I help my stranded neighbor? How can I accommodate this person? Because maybe they are in need of help for tonight or maybe tomorrow without really reading to them the rules on how I help them. How can we help each other without going to the community to point at ourselves like, oh, I help them. You don't have to remind somebody you help them. Help somebody quietly and move on so they can also do better and move on to the next person. If we start writing all these, I help them, it won't make this place a better world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And do you think in your experience so far, by the way, how long have you been in the U.S.?
24 years.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's I mean, you're a full-on American.
Yeah.
And I have to say, well, my question is, do you think you have positively influenced people around you here in Oregon and, you know, throughout the country? And can you tell, like, if you've positively influenced them, if you've kind of showed them a little bit of how the world looks like outside our little, you know, corner of the world, which is not very little, but yeah.
I'm not sure if I've been able to influence them, but through interactions with people, it's just humbling when they tell you, like, oh, I'm learning something from you, which I acknowledge and I'm thankful for. It humbles me, but at the same time, I have to remember also that I'm learning something as well from those I interact with, because this is a mutual experience. We are meeting at a certain point so that we can learn from each other. It's not like I'm the one trying to teach people what to do, but I'm also, we are equals in this, on this stage, so we are learning from each other. Some things I've learned from here, for example, Americans have taught me to not waste time talking in circles. Hit straight. That's the one they want. Once you start going in circles, they start moving around. You can tell by their body features, like, I'm making them uncomfortable now. You can tell. So they taught me to hit straight. Hit straight. Say it now. So it helps us to save time. At the same time, they are not afraid to say the truth. If you do something that's not okay, they tell you right away, okay, this is not okay. It's good. It saves time, saves suspicions and thoughts and feelings. It's okay. In my culture, if you do something wrong, you would call an uncle and report to him like, oh, this guy is my son-in-law. I don't think I like the way he drinks. Or I don't like the way he treats my daughter. You have to go in circles. In America, they would say, hey, I don't like the way you're treating my daughter. I don't like that. So it saves time. So in America, time is money. I like that. I've learned that. And it makes me a better person.
Oh, that's a good question. I'm about to ask you. Yeah. Do you like that or have you learned that?
I've learned and I like
things.
It. I've learned it and I like it.
Okay. So you've adapted very well then.
Yes, it saves time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And what's your mind right now?
What's on my mind right now is that I'm liking the way my American story is a very interesting story, because there are a lot of things that I discover on the streets or in our hangouts, in social hangouts, and a lot of other places that make me laugh so well. But to the American, this is normal. It's their culture. I'm laughing because I'm just making a quick comparison of how my people would be feeling when this happened in their culture, in my setup, in my home country, and compared to what's happening right now in my face. And I'm the only one looking at this picture. Nobody will understand why I'm laughing, but it's really killing me right now because this is so funny. As an example, somebody brings a dog to the airport trying to ride the plane, right? It's a service animal. I get that, respectfully. Then somebody comes tomorrow and next time they bring a peacock. Like, to me, I'm bringing this peacock because it's also my service animal. How come you allow the dog to be a service animal? I use a peacock for that. It's funny to me, but they have their rights. So when you compare this quest for rights, sometimes it can be a funny thing, but sometimes...
So I have to interrupt you. So basically, yeah. American shenanigans make you laugh.
They do.
Can you share with us another American? Because we're I want to remind the audience, you're listening to KBOO Portland, and we're with TK Taparura, is one of our brand new public affairs programmers. You've been here for about 14 months. That's considered new. And your show is The Global Sale, broadcast every first Wednesday of the month at 7 p.m., just like today, October 2nd. Today is the first Wednesday of the month. And your show, your program is about the African immigrant experience. And again, you know, first Wednesday of the month at 7 p.m. here on KBOO. And we're talking about American shenanigans. And I want you to finish because we have to close. So we have to wrap up fairly shortly.
Oh, yeah.
Just share with us something funny, like really, just something ridiculous.
Something ridiculous that you saw here.
Yeah.
Something really funny too about this culture here is that if you see a divorced couple, if somebody divorces and they remarry, right? When you meet at a party, they may have three kids. Americans have to make it a point that they define, like, you see these three kids, the first one is mine. The second one was brought by the wife. Then the third one is ours. In my culture, if you walk in with your kids, they are yours. One has to know, like, oh, the first one brought with the wife. Actually, they can even break it down further for you, like, this is my second marriage or this is my third marriage. We don't have to know that. That's your personal life. Just show love and respect and just be embracing to all the kids you have in your hands. We don't have to know all those footnotes, I would say. In my culture, there are no footnotes. If I tell you those are my kids, that's good enough. It ends there. So it's funny how they want to be as specific as they can be, which is a good thing, but I think it's kind of, to me, it's divisive.
Mm-hmm.
Because just own them. They are part of your family, right?
Well, as an American myself, I think we tend to be, or people around me tend to love details.
That's
and being
right.
specific.
Exactly.
The moment you're vague, people start to be like, why are you being so vague? I love being vague, though, personally. But anyway, I just want to, you know, it's been such a great conversation here with TK Taparura, who is the host and creator of The Global Sale, first Wednesdays of the month at 7 p.m. here on KBOO, your community radio station. And my name is Andrew Black. I'm Director of Public Affairs here at KBOO. And I want to thank you so much for listening. Thank you to our program director, Director Asia Hawthorne, for board hopping. Thank you so much. And thank you to Nick. Because Nick is definitely, you know, he's learning and he's 100%. They are 100% volunteer here. Thank you, Nick. And we're out of here.
Thank you.
Have a good night.
Good night.
njere zese zi Zakunge ufuse
KBOO Portland.
Journey through lush songs and soundscapes teeming with life during the Garden of the Heart. Each episode explores the ways that music carries our emotions. Explore the garden every second Friday of